Hey everyone, welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Trek actor and guest star of the 1990 Quantum Leap episode, Good Night, Dear Heart, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil.
Oh, wow.
And myself, your favorite forever ensign, Garrett Wong. Remember, you can get the full version of this podcast by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/TheDeltaFlyers.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Oh my gosh.
I'm reaching deep. I'm reaching really deep.
Quantum Leap.
Yes. Nice. Yes. Wow. One of my favorite shows, by the way, when I was growing up. Yeah. I love that show. So yeah. I'm sure I saw your episode not knowing that that was you. Well, did you look similar to how you looked in Masters of the Universe?
No, they cut my hair short. And
oh, your short hair?
Greased it back like 50s style.
You're a 1950s guy. Okay.
Yeah. Gotcha. He was a real kind of shy, quiet. He was in love with I haven't thought about that in years. I think my character was in love with some girl who died and was heartbroken. Oh. And Scott Bakula was investigating his Quantum Leap style.
Right.
And discovered that she was killed by like her best friend, a girl who was in love with her, but it was forbidden back then. Oh. So there was some interesting stories in that episode. Okay. And my favorite memory of Quantum Leap was going to the looping stage. I went to go do my looping, my ADR stuff, and Scott Bakula was there. He was great on set, by the way.
Okay,
he was amazing.
And that's what I hear about him. So
And I've worked with him a few times and he's always amazing. But my best memory of Quantum Leap was going to do my looping. Mm-hmm. And I got there and he was finishing up his looping and his kids were on these blankets with toys on the floor. And I remember just going in and going and thinking, my God, like he's here doing his looping and he brought his kids and they're playing and he's hanging out. And what a good guy. Like I remember that looping as we crossed paths, just going, he's an awesome guy.
Well, you know what? It influenced you because you did bring your child to set to the looping stage once as well. I was scheduled after you, so you were before me. And so when I arrived, Taylor was there. Your oldest child was with you at the time. And then she was doing some, of course, she goes, Garrett, look, this is my new dance routine. And she started doing she started showing me this choreographed dance. You know, she took dance, I guess, when she was very young. So she was twirling around, showing me all these moves and everything. And I was like, that's wonderful, Taylor. I need to work right now. Please. Can I please come work now? It was so funny. It was almost like time would stop when your daughter was around.
You know? She would take over for sure.
Well, here's a question.
That's like
you.
Scott Bakula.
Very much like Scott Bakula. Did you, when you directed Enterprise, did Scott go, Quantum Leap like that? Did he remember you from the show?
I don't think he remembered.
Oh, that's too bad.
I don't think he remembered it in detail because he made so many episodes.
Yes.
But
you refreshed his memory though.
His
I'm sure.
partner,
yeah.
Chelsea Field is her name. Mm-hmm. Chelsea was in Masters of the Universe with me.
As what?
She was Tila. And she's awesome.
Yeah.
And so when I worked with Scott on Enterprise, we talked a lot about Chelsea and the memories I had with her and working with her on Masters and things like that.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
I love it. All right. Well, let's talk about our show now.
Yes, let's do it.
So this week's episode is The Disease. This is the other big Harry Kim centric episode for season 5, Timeless being the main one. And then this was the kind of the secondary primary episode for my character for this season. So I'm going to ask, I'm going to ask you to guess, who do you think the director was on this episode? I'm going to give you three guesses. And let's see if you get it, because I already know because I worked on the episodes. So I remember. Yeah. But let's just see.
Disease. If you can pull it out. I'm going to say this is David Livingstone.
You're right.
Was I right?
Yes. You took the odds on favorite first. I was waiting for the more obscure. I should have said, give me the more obscure choice first. Yeah, and then I would have said, what's the? Yeah, it was Livingston. Oh, so funny. Yeah, you're right about that. All right. So let's go watch this episode.
Let's do. And, I'm excited now.
Wait. Here, okay. Who wrote the teleplay?
Who wrote it? Disease. I'm going to say Ken Biller wrote this one.
Okay, you're close.
Really?
Yeah, you're kind of close. So. Oh, all right. You're batting. You're doing very well. I'm very surprised. I'm very surprised. Okay. All right. So let's go watch this episode, The Disease, and we will be right back with our recap and discussion of The Disease.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, everybody. We are back.
Yes, we are.
All right. So first of all, you are correct. You're correct on David Livingston being the director. And yes. You were halfway correct on Biller being the story by Ken Biller, teleplay. Because I asked you who did the teleplay. That's Michael Taylor who did that one.
Yep.
But you know, you're pretty darn close. So I'm pretty excited.
Who would have thought?
Who would have thunk?
I'm impressed myself.
Yes. I did not ask you, what are you wearing hat wise? What does it say on there?
Oh, this is from a distillery in Vancouver.
Ah.
I couldn't read it on the thing, but yeah, it's Roots and Wings Distillery. So it's a farm distillery out in near Abbotsford outside of Vancouver out in the country. And nice. It's a great little distillery. They have a great restaurant. If you go out there, they make gins and vodkas and liquors, and they have this organic menu and this organic farm. It's a great tasting kind of place. I love it. It was just cool. Super charming.
Yeah, I love
that's
it.
That's my hat.
Let me show off my show and tell. Here's my shirt. As you can see, this is a tribute to the original series Phaser there. And number one Stunna. This is one of the very, very early t-shirts that I had basically had in my line of shirts from
a long
time ago. Yeah, so I just found this in the closet. I'm like, hey, I should put this on. I haven't worn this in decades, it seems. All right, let's jump right into our recap, starting with our poetry synopsis.
Yes, always starting with the poetry.
Yes, of course. And here we go with my haiku of The Disease.
Yes.
Harry has a glow. Disobeys Janeway's orders, lives with pain of loss.
The haiku does capture it. Okay,
but let's
now
hear
for the limerick.
Yes,
here we go, our limerick for The Disease. Voyager runs into a xenophobic species. Harry chooses tall for his main squeezies. Freedom finally takes wing. Seven says, here's the thing. Turns out love isn't actually a diseases.
Wow, you made up your own words for this one.
I did.
Well,
when I started with diseases. Xenophobic species, and I was like, squeezies, diseases.
Okay. So, you know, when Rebecca gets back from the post office, do you want her to come up with another one?
I like this one.
It's cute. But you took some artistic license. You brought in words that
sometimes you have to add a little cutesy. Sometimes the limerick needs a little fun. Okay.
All right. Okay. We will allow your new words that you've invented. If I was to make up random words, you might say that you've cheated on this, basically. you'd call me out on it. So
that's true.
But the thing
about the limerick is it's got to have a little fun to it.
It does have fun.
Or else it's not a real limerick. Too serious.
But the limerick itself and the structure of the limerick is already fun as it is. And
true.
You don't have to give the extra zhuzh to there. I mean, I'm very appreciative of diseases and squeezies.
Squeezies.
And I'll tell you, any six-year-old listening to Delta Flyers.
Squeezies.
Yeah. Any young Delta Flyers listener or viewer is going to be absolutely
they're gonna love the extra,
ecstatic with the extra flare. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's got a little flair.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Teleplay by Michael Taylor, story by Ken Biller, directed by David Livingston.
Yes.
Let's talk about our guest stars.
Let's talk about Musetta Vander. Musetta Vander, she played Tall in The Disease.
Yes, Musetta Vander has been acting for a very long time. And I recall when she was cast, I was pretty excited because she was in the feature film The Wild Wild West, which once was a TV show. Wow. Yeah, and then it became a feature film. Kenneth Branagh played the lead bad guy in that, and she was one of his sidekicks, you know, sort of like the two henchmen of the bad guy happened to be two women. So Musetta was one of them. And I remember, I remember going, oh, I know who you are when she showed up on set. But, you know, her resume is a very long, long, long resume. She's still acting right now as we speak.
Oh, great.
Christopher Liam Moore, who plays the stowaway. And funny enough, when you look up like the script online, there's no name for his character except for Stowaway. Is all it says on there. I'm like,
that's probably what it was on in the script too.
Yeah, which is that's interesting. What's interesting with Christopher Liam Moore is that he was already on Voyager as a guest star.
What?
Yes, he had a lot of alien makeup on, but he was.
Who was he?
Well, he was in the episode with the dinosaur aliens. So
really,
yes, he was one of the
one of those planet
star, yes,
the species that was living on the planet.
Well, this, yes, exactly, the species, remember, they Distant Origin was the name of the name of the episode. So he was one of the I'm going to call them dinosaur aliens, but you know that he was one of those guys. So that's Chris. He went to Harvard. And then Charles Rocket plays,
yes,
interesting name, because when you look it up, it's spelled J-I-P-P-E-Q, JPEG, which I thought was, wait a minute, is it JPEG? Is that, you know, a JPEG? Yeah. Maybe that's what he was named after, JPEG. I don't know, but JPEG was his name. Charles Rocket, I did not know this, but he was a cast member of Saturday Night Live in 1980. I had no clue. And I was
had no idea either.
The time that he was on there, there was a segment he used to do where he would go out on the streets of New York City and sort of just talk to random people on the street.
Right.
And that has still been known as one of the strongest segments of his time on the on SNL. Like, that was one of the best segments for the entire show. So still, very talented individual, very comedic. Before acting, Charles Rocket was a news anchor.
Was he really?
Yeah, so he delivered the news on
two
or three different stations in different parts of the country. So this man's resume, he's done it all.
Wow.
He's done it all.
I feel like he was friends with Bob Picardo. I don't know why. I feel like
I could believe that. He's originally from Bangor, Maine. And, you know, I think SNL was his very first credit, 1980.
Really?
Yes, which is amazing to be cast as that without any prior resume, you know? So really accomplished individual. Okay, let's start.
Let's get into it.
Let's jump right into it.
Exterior. Let's do, because I'm sure you've got a lot to say.
I got a lot to say. Exterior shot of the...
Mr. Love Man.
Exterior shot of the Varro ship. Really cool shot, because you see it just tracks along the side of this very long ship.
It's a very cool, it feels like a big movie shot.
Yeah.
And then a bunch of that stuff in this episode. I thought the vis effects of that
ship did a great job. And that opening shot where it just kind of tracks along the side of the ship to show you the magnitude of this ship, how big this ship is. And then it starts kind of veering in and focusing on one segment, and then a little bit closer. Then now you see some windows to some quarters, and you go into the quarters, actually. Really cool shot, to the point where the doors open to the quarters. And it flies through the portal, it goes into the ship, the room,
and then the empty room for a minute, and then pushes right up to this door,
right?
And the door flies open,
and it tilts down, and you see the feet first, right? And it's feet of two people, they kind of come up, then the camera kind of raises a little higher, and you see it's Harry and somebody, an alien, and they are just you know, kissing, and
she pulls his communicator off.
That was a funny scene with Harry going like, hey, I need that. And she's like,
wait, that's my communicator. She's like, yeah. Work away.
Put that away.
And then she pulls up his shirt and starts kissing his belly.
Oh yeah, or my solar plexus. I don't know. She's right there in my third chakra is where she's kissing.
I felt like I was I was watching something I shouldn't be watching.
Well, Robbie, you got to see my nipple right there.
I did.
You got to see my nipple, and I you know, I was thinking Robbie's looking at my nipple right now.
Everybody's seen your nipple.
Everybody has seen my right nipple.
Free the nipple.
Free the nipple. So yeah, I had the nip slip, and I start glowing, which is different.
Yes, you become translucent. It looks like
like what do you think, like a jellyfish, or I don't know what you would
something
compare
like that
to.
Yes, but reptilian almost.
It was very
spots and stuff.
Yes, very much so. And it kind of reminded me a little bit of Avatar, and there's a lot of you know, things that happened there with glowing and you know what. And then
was it also awkward to shoot that scene? Was it awkward to do the, like, do you remember?
Yes, it was. It was awkward. And the other glowing thing is from Twilight, the vampire series, where the vampires glow. And I'm wondering if Stephanie Meyer, the author of Twilight, was watching the Voyager episode and went, oh, I think I could include that in my vampire series. It was awkward for me. I remember before that particular scene, I was actually outside the set. I was on the soundstage, but I was outside the actual set. And I was doing push-ups, and it was Billy Pete that walked up, and he was like, "If you ain't got it now, he was pretty much like, it ain't gonna change in like a few push-ups, basically." And I said, "Listen, Billy, I'm just trying to get a bit of a pump, you know. That's all. I just want to get some blood going in there through there, so you know, that's it. I know I'm not going to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger in a matter of three sets of push-ups, but I want to get this pump going." And I was extremely nervous because, I mean, anytime you do a scene like that and you're that close to somebody and you just met them.
And this is the first scene in the episode, but not necessarily, probably not the first scene that you filmed with her. You probably had worked with her on other days before you filmed the scene, would be my guess.
Yeah, I recall that there's a scene later where I'm in sort of a tank top, and I'm told this is when I'm stressing out and all worried and everything a little bit later. I do feel like that was filmed
first
early. Yes, I do.
Interesting.
Like which was definitely very interesting. Yeah. I extremely nervous. And then at that time I still had the super sweaty palms and everything. And so, you know, I even told, and a lot of times whenever I had scenes where I had to be very physical or had to touch a guest star's hand or anything else, I would always say, like, just, you know, I suffer from excessive sweating, and I'm sorry if you end up feeling my sweaty palms and have to deal with that. But I would, you know, preface it or begin by saying this just to make the other person comfortable. And of course, everyone's been very, very accommodating and like, don't worry about it. It's fine. It's okay. I'm not going to freak out. I'm like, okay, good. But I just remember I was supremely nervous before every single scene of intimacy with her.
It's awkward. You know, you're dealing with somebody that you don't really know and having to fake these sort of love scenes, these passionate scenes. And you had a lot of it. I mean, this story was really authentically, it wasn't just a story with gratuitous sort of sexual scenes,
because
it was fundamental
to the
story that you feel their emotional connection, the physical connection, just that sort of romantic ideal kind of connection that people, the deepest kind they feel. And I thought it was great. Yeah.
You know, what's funny is that this scene or this episode was filmed 23 years ago, but watching it now, I was laughing with nervous laughter, you know, when I was seeing a lot of these scenes. So I was still nervous for myself, even though this is over two decades ago that this was filmed. All right. So we have an exterior shot of the, after we come back from the opening credits, we have an exterior shot of the Varro generational ship while we have Janeway's supplemental captain's log. She's talking about after 2 weeks, we are close to repairing the Vara warp drive. But then she mentions that it seems like some of them would rather give up warp than accept help from outsiders. So now this is our very first indication that this is a species that has really tried to stay away from any other species, because clearly they've dealt with some not so savory characters in the past, or, and so they've had to basically kind of exclude themselves or excommunicate themselves from the rest of the quadrant to just keep safe. Evidently, we are now on the Varro. What is listed as the control room in the script?
It looks like an engine room.
Yeah, let's say engine room, something like that. Yeah,
yeah, like their main control room. Yeah.
So can we call it control room from now on? If we go through. Okay.
Yeah, she enters the control room. She starts to talk with Jepek. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, Jepek.
Jepek. Mm-hmm. And he says he's like, what are you doing in here? We told you, I told you the central control room, the control room is off limits.
Yeah.
So more xenophobic kind of like boundaries. Mm-hmm. She says she's going to check the antimatter injectors.
Yeah.
They check them. They are back online. By the way, her hairdo, it's like, I don't know. I've never seen her hair quite so, it almost looked like greasy. She had grease on her face. Like her sleeves are rolled up.
Yes.
I was like, what is this look? Is she like working at an auto repair center or something? It was just bizarre.
Yes. Anyway. So clearly the Varro ship is a 57 Chevy or whatever that you got to work on. So
like, where did the grease come from?
She's got it all over herself. But he eases up a little bit because his whole complaint is you've been here for 2 weeks and I've seen zero progress.
Yeah.
And that's when Janeway says, well, take a look at the antimatter injectors, like you said, and he looks at it and they're back online. And this gives him a little bit of like pause. And he's like, okay, wait a minute. These people they're not trying to dupe us. Cause I really felt like he felt that we were grifters, that we were trying to con him even at this point, 2 weeks away. But then we find out in this conversation, because Janeway talks about, we're kind of the same. We're like cousins. Yeah. And that you guys started out 400 years ago with one ship, and slowly but surely you've added on, and now it's a generational ship. And we may also end up being a generational ship in terms of our timeline of getting back to Earth. And, after this little story of camaraderie that Janeway throws out there to try to, butter him up a little bit. Now we see Tom and B'Elanna enter. So you guys pop in there really quickly.
And we have grease. We've got the grease and the parts, the car parts.
Grease monkeys as well coming in there.
And Voyager hails. Chakotay calls in and says, okay, we're ready for the transfer, the antimatter transfer.
Mm-hmm.
So the next scene is we go into Tal's quarters and she wakes up. And by the way, she was wearing a sheet wrapped around her. So clearly they had rolled around in the sheets tonight before. But you could see on the sheet that it was literally built to cover her. Like you could see the structure in the seams where they had sewn this. Like that was her costume, was a sheet.
What?
I don't know if you...
You saw the seams in the sheet that covered her body?
You could see where it had been sewn around like her armpits and stuff.
I did not catch that.
She probably wore that as a costume so she could walk onto set, lay down.
Wow.
And then they draped the sheet around so it looks like it's just wrapped around her. But it was literally a costume built for her.
Now, my question is, do you think all Varro people have that crazy tattoo on their spine?
Yes.
Or those markings?
Yes.
Or is that even is that a tattoo or is that a biological marking that
it's a biological, it's got to be a biological thing. Because when you were glowing, you had a similar kind of look.
Oh,
you know what I mean? The glowing had the same pattern.
All right.
And Harry is staring out a window at this point when she wakes up and she's like, come on back in. Oh, and he's in a tank top and shorts.
Yeah.
How'd you feel about that?
I think they asked me to be just in the shorts and I said no, because I felt I wasn't built up enough to really just take it.
I don't think our cast was known for
we're not the buff cast. I felt like, all right, I'm going to have them put a tank top on me. I'm not going to be shirtless. Sure. I'm going to cover some of the skinniness. Yeah, it worked fine.
The shorts and the tank top were good. She goes, come on, Harry, let's cuddle.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, he's worried about work and everything. Mm-hmm. And she says, come back here. That's an order.
Yeah.
I love that when she orders you.
Orders me around. All right,
if he's such a workaholic. I'll just make it like work. Yeah. But he jumps back in bed and all of a sudden there's a shake.
Yeah.
And we realize the warp plasma transfer has started.
Which she's supposed to be at. He's not there. Harry tries to put on his uniform. She's laughing.
It's her clothes.
Cute moment though, right there, for sure. When he realizes it's not, he throws it at her. She's laughing. Mm-hmm. And then I love this part. And I'm putting on my uniform now. And I said, look, you don't understand. If I'm not at my post, she goes, you'll be executed. Like, I just love that line. You'll be executed. So now we're at the Varro control room and B'Elanna and Tom are already there. They're doing their plasma transfer and they're talking about classical music and
because of Tom's button pushing technique.
Oh, that's
because I was doing the underhanded. She's like, maybe you should try some Tchaikovsky next or something.
Chopin.
Chopin next. Because I was doing a fancy, like, fast button pushing.
Oh, that's what it was. Oh, got you.
I was there. I remembered shooting the scene actually, because I remember like, what can I do that would be so different in terms of like, it's button pushing. How piano players sometimes do like the playing piano and then they sort of cross over.
So that's what you did.
I was like, oh, I'll do that. Yeah. I'll do something like that. Cause it'll be different than, I haven't seen anybody do that.
No one does that.
Instead of the overhand, I'll do the underhand. So I was like, push, 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 underhand.
Oh.
That was my invention, the old underhand move.
I love it.
I think I trademarked it for all of Star Trek. If anybody ever does an underhand move,
you better talk to Robbie.
Pay up.
Before litigation begins.
That's right.
So it's definitely not lost upon both B'Elanna and Tom that Harry is late. Yes, Harry comes up with his jacket
undone.
But he's got a cockamamie excuse. He's like, I was checking the plasma conduits in section 22. And that's not the truth, clearly.
No.
And B'Elanna discovers that there are microfractures all over the hall.
Kind of shaking.
It's like everywhere.
I gotta say that when Tall and Janeway and Japek are standing there in a three shot and it's shaking.
Yeah.
I did not buy Tall shakes. She needed to see the shake video.
She didn't see the shake video.
No, it was like a dance move she was doing.
Yeah.
I didn't buy her shakes. I'll just say that doing a shake, Star Trek shakes it's not easy.
Yeah.
Not everybody can do it.
I agree. Yeah. And maybe they just didn't give her the tutorial beforehand.
I don't think she got the videotape that was sent to all of us.
No, she didn't get it. Okay.
Anyway, there are microfractures. So we have to abort this transfer. And Janeway's like, well, we're going to have to investigate. Where are these microfractures? The guy goes, what are you talking about? That's going to take days. She's like, well, we better get started. The sooner, the better.
But the issue is these microfractures have never been detected before. Yeah. Even during this entire 2-week investigation, now all of a sudden they just pop up out of the blue. So it's strange. Mm-hmm. It's a little weird.
Yeah.
Suspicious. Or sus, as the youngins say today.
Yes.
So
We go to a hallway scene and here's a nice Tom and Harry scene.
Yeah, we're exiting a transporter room, right? So we leave the transporter room and go into the hallway. Mm-hmm.
And Tom is very suspicious of what Harry's been doing. He's like, what's going on? I know. Tell me what's going on. And I love when Tom says, you know, haven't you learned anything from me in the last 5 years?
And here we go again, always going after the impossible woman.
By the way, I got to say, as I watch this, I remember looping this scene.
Are you kidding?
I totally remember because there was one line.
Yeah.
And it was a section from, I wrote it down. Here we go again. Then Harry says, what? And then Tom continues, you going after the impossible woman, a hologram, an ex-Borg, the wrong twin.
Yeah.
And now a girl from a xenophobic species. And I had to do a couple of those lines in a row, like the, here we go again.
Uh-huh.
And I had to loop it and we're supposed to be walking. So there I am in the looping stage, pretending to walk in place, trying to get the timing of, here we go again. What is you? It was, I must have done this 50 times.
Oh, it's one of those that you get stuck on.
I got stuck on this and I don't remember filming the scene, but I remember looping it because I was there for a long time with this section.
And you're not alone in being stuck. I think every single Star Trek actor has been stuck on some piece of looping throughout their career.
This one was the toughest. Okay. Yeah, this one stands out for sure.
Yeah. Mine has always been the word H-U-L-L. Hull. A lot of times I'll say hull and it sounds like hole, H-O-L-E. And so I had issues with hull. You had issues with this one. My goodness. No. I didn't know.
This one was just like the timing and the length of it. My timing was very weird.
This is also news to me. So when you do voiceovers of a walk and talk, you actually walk in place too?
I will sometimes. Yeah.
Wow.
I want to get like the feeling of what that does in your body as you're talking. Because if I'm just standing there, it's not going to match. It's not going to sound like I'm walking.
Well, you know, when it comes to physical exertion, if there's something where I'm pulling myself up, I will kind of get into that too. But I'd never simulated the walk during a walk and talk. And so this is news to me.
During looping. But sometimes they would hear it and they
tell you to be quiet.
They'd say, can you walk? Yeah. Or do you need to walk? Can you walk softer?
They're like, we don't need you. You're not a Foley artist. Yeah. So
I took my shoes off. So I'm just in my socks so I can move around.
Okay.
This is a standout looping scene for me.
Okay. I didn't know that.
And I didn't love my performance because of the loop, because I knew the whole thing was looped.
Oh,
I was my voice doesn't sound. It just doesn't sound like
it didn't
really
match
present. It didn't work for me.
And then, you know, at the very end, you know, Harry's to convince, okay, fine. I'm going to put her out of my mind.
Put her out of my mind. I'm going to end it. Right.
Done.
I thought, oh, good.
Yeah.
But ha, ha, ha.
But the minute you're gone.
As soon as he goes in his quarters.
Harry's quarters. To the video call.
Right to the video call.
Yeah. I got to say, more than anything, lots of cute dialogue and flirting. But what bugged me throughout this entire episode was Harry's hair.
What?
Oh my God. Yeah, because you sound like
the network.
I'll tell you what happened. Yeah, I sound like Carrie McCluggage's office, don't I? What happened was the hair department decided to invest in these steam rollers, these steam-based rollers, and they rolled all my hair to give it volume. Okay. Then they would style it. But because of the rolling, it looked kind of poofy, like I had a perm, like I had a body wave or some type of perm in there.
I didn't notice your hair looking very different at all.
It was poofy and permy looking.
Wavy looking.
Yes, the entire episode. And it pulled me out a lot, unfortunately.
Oh, that's funny. I didn't notice it at all.
Didn't look bad to you. So that's good.
I did not even know, even a little, honestly. Like I would tell you if I had even thought of it for a second.
It didn't cross your mind for a millisecond the entire episode. You never thought like, wow, his hair looks kind of weird.
Okay. No, I thought your hair looked good throughout. Okay. I did notice Janeway's hair when she the auto mechanic scene, but I did not notice
hers. All right, let's move on.
All right, but there's an awkward conversation where they're kind of recounting the night before. And I got to say, it went a little... I feel like when Harry said something like, well, the birds and the bees would be very confused. I'm like, that sounds so kinky. I don't want to hear I don't want to imagine like the details. It just felt a little too specific for me comfort. I got
it. It was a TMI?
It was a little TMI.
Okay. Yeah. That is fine.
I was like, what the hell happened that the bees and the birds and the bees won't even understand?
Yeah. I was so cringy over my hair. I didn't even notice the conversation. I was like, what is my hair doing? Okay.
Yeah. I was cringing a little
on the dialogue. That's all right. That's all right. Now we cut to the bridge and Tom is so impressed with the Varro systems, the ship systems. He's really excited. He's so into it. I've never seen Tom excited, but not this excited over.
Yeah.
It was like, oh my God, you can recreate the Vulcan homeworld in your quarters, Tuvok. And Tuvok is like, just nonplussed. He's like, whatever. Why would I do that? He doesn't care at all.
Yeah. Paris is trying to sell really hard to Tuvok and Tuvok is just not buying it.
Yeah.
I love when he's like, oh, Paris literally like, I give up. I quit or something.
You've never ha'd it
in all of the episodes leading up to this point. And so, my note was like, look at Paris freaking out. Oh, I was like, this is new for me. It's new.
I give up. Yes. And then Chakotay goes, so quickly or something?
Yeah, yeah. But he says it, but he's talking to Tuvok. It's almost like they have an aside conversation.
He's like, I've never seen Paris give up that quickly. How'd you do it or something? And Tuvok's like, I just let
his own illogic end the conversation.
Frustrate him or something.
So bizarre.
It was really funny.
Tuvok detects the unauthorized transmission and Chakotay orders Tuvok to investigate further.
Then we cut to Harry's quarters. Mm-hmm. So they're picking up this call that Harry's making that he's not supposed to be making.
Correct. More flirting.
But I have a question. Why did you have all that big plate of fruit by your computer? Like, where did that come from? All of a sudden, I'm like, is he going to eat that? Like, it's weird fruit.
Harry's going to use
fruit sex or something.
Clearly, again, I was so distracted by my poofy hair. I didn't even notice the fruit.
By my perm,
but you caught the fruit, which is really
I was just like, no, they're going to start using fruit. And it's going to be super awkward.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But all they do talk about, like, where would you want to be if you could be anywhere right now? So you start to get this idea. She's got an itch to travel.
Yes.
Venture. You're starting to feel that. And then we cut back to the bridge and we see Tom saving you yet
again. He does. So the message has been sent to the Varro ship, the communication or the message, section 16, living quarters. So Tuvok's kind of, you know, he's the minute he says section 16 living quarters, Tom is like, immediately realizes,
rut row.
And yeah, you are the ultimate friend.
I save your butt. I end the transmission. And then I'm like, oh, it must've been a mistake. Probably not a big deal. And I literally I make another big face. It's like, this is the big acting scenes on
this
the bridge.
This is Tom's facial mugging episode is what it
is. Oh my God.
You got to mug everywhere.
Somebody's got to do the big acting.
Yes, but thank you. Thank you for saving my butt. I do appreciate that. We jump to Cargo Bay and we're listening to Chakotay talk about, you know, what we have to do to help out the Varro ship. Tom and Harry are standing in the back. And that is when Tom spills the beans about what he did for Harry. And so this huge conversation happens. And my note was that I wish I would have taken more time with these lines. Like I spit them out so quickly. I feel like I would have tried to be a little bit less forthcoming about what has happened with Tall and I would have tried to hide it more, maybe, you know, and to say, oh, that was just work. But I just give up the information. I give up the 411 immediately to you.
It seemed to me like you were answering quickly because you just didn't want to talk about it. Everybody standing around.
Okay. So it played okay to you. It played all right. All right.
I remember filming this scene actually. And it was one of those where the camera sort of pushed past everybody into our private conversation. And we had to, supposedly we were whispering, you know, that no one could hear us.
Right.
But of course, the other actors are standing right there and can hear us. So it's just, I do remember filming this scene and feeling a little bit like it went from this wide shot with everybody pushing in, but they were still there. Like, what are we doing? Can't they hear us? In fact, I feel like Beltran or somebody was like, we can hear you. I feel like I remember that, them. Like,
you're joking about that, maybe at the end of a take.
We can still hear you, Tom. We can still hear you. Just because you're fake whispering doesn't mean we're not 2 feet away.
So fake whispering is whispering?
Yes, whispering.
Whispering. Exactly. All right. And then, you know, he gives out duty assignments. Everyone will be paired into teams of two. And Seven has been assigned Harry. She walks up with the duty assignment and hands me the pad. And that's the end of our whispering scene. So we.
I thought this is maybe the point where, you know, Seven and Harry have to team up, and then that's when it breaks into the musical number of his fantasy about Seven, but it never happened. But I was just hoping that there would be a musical number in this episode.
There should have been. There really should have been.
Instead, we go to Astrometrics. Harry and Seven are working, and Harry says, what does she think of love? And she's like, well, what kind of love?
Familial love? Yeah, but he prefaces it. He goes, Seven, you've been around humans for a while now. What do you think about love? And I laughed at that because I'm like, no, she's still new to humanity. What are you asking her for advice? She's the last person to ask.
But she does say over 6,000 assimilated species have all experienced love.
This condition. She calls it this condition.
And then she calls it a disease for the first time. She says it's kind of like a disease.
I just want to say the original script, when it was sent to my house for me to read, it was entitled Alien Love Story, was the name of
really?
This. Yes. And then later revisions, it said the disease and it said FKA, formerly known as Alien Love Story in parentheses.
It's on the nose to what Seven's analogy is. And I did put disease in my limerick, so I'm glad it's called the disease. But
you said diseases. I'd rather this episode be called the diseases than the disease for sure. Harry glows. He starts to glow, and that's when Seven notices, like, you are glowing. And Harry's like, no, it's nothing. It's fine. Just a little. I don't know. It's just nothing. It's just the lighting. You must be confused. Yeah.
Then trying he glows to cover again. It up again.
You can't cover it. No. And it was so awkward filming this end of the scene because she says, you know, you must report to sick bay. I'm like, no, I'm good. And Jerry physically grabs me and yanks me out of that set. And I just remember feeling so awkward filming this. It's just like, I'm being grabbed by the teacher. Like, you're going to the principal's office is how I felt. And that was one of the awkward moments there at the end of that scene. I remember that.
Yes. And Harry's like, I feel fine, doc. I feel fine. And the doctor's like, yeah, you should feel wonderful right now. Your beta endorphins are abnormally elevated. And, you know.
Yeah. And every question he asks, I'm like, nope. Because did you eat any weird food? Nope. Did you do this on that ship?
Nope. It's none of that. And then he's like, all right, we're going to have to like have a lockdown. This could be
an alien virus. So
an alien virus and
quarantine.
Like, whoa, wait a minute. I will tell you maybe, but Seven, can you leave? And she's like, well, I should be here in case there's an outbreak or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, please. It's personal. Okay. So she leaves and then he tries to explain they were intimate.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Doc's like, what do you mean? Intimate how? Like, he goes, you know, intimate, like personally, like we were connect. He's like, you were personally how?
Yeah.
And finally Harry's like, sex. We had sex. Okay. We had sex. It's very funny.
So awkward. Just super awkward. And the doctor's like, look, I'm sorry to tell you this, but I must report this to the captain.
Must report it. And I must, you know, give you a checkup and your friend.
Your friend. Yeah.
That's awkward.
It is so awkward. Oh, my goodness.
Go to the ready room. Janeway's pissed.
Yeah, she's pissed, but I'll tell you what, we got some beautiful warm lighting on us. That sort of
which
that,
is rare. That sunset.
Oh, very rare.
Usually facing the windows, it's dark space.
Yeah.
So the fact that we're facing the windows and it's that glow off of
the Varro ship is what it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I noticed the same thing.
We look
really different.
We look good with that. That golden hour, that nice, sort of sunset lighting that we had, we looked fabulous.
Yeah. Even though you were really getting lectured too.
I was getting lectured. Yep. She's entering a formal reprimand into my record. And then she orders me to break off the relationship. It's like, no, you can't see her ever again, basically. Yep.
You got to end it.
Yep. Hard pill for Harry to swallow.
Yep. And now we go out into the hall and Neelix is catching up with Tuvok.
Mm-hmm.
And Neelix says, Tuvok, I saw an unauthorized use of a replicator. And Tuvok's like, oh, it's a replicator. Like, that's not a felony or whatever. It's not a big deal.
Right.
And Neelix goes, but it was unauthorized and they accessed life support.
Yeah, so they use the replicator station to reroute power to a section of the Jeffries tube. And also, Neelix also informs Tuvok that some of the mess hall supplies, some of the rations
have been
stolen or taken by somebody. Uh-huh. And so Tuvok, that does pique his interest. And now the next shot is Tuvok and Neelix in the Jeffries tube, where they have discovered a bag of rations.
Yeah,
rations and
cheese, like Parmesan cheese.
String cheese or Parmesan?
String cheese.
Yeah.
I would say Parmesan. It looked like a hard cheese.
Or it looked like soap. It could have been soap. Yeah.
It didn't look yummy though. That's all I'll say.
It looked very not savory. Nothing that you would want to eat anything.
It did not look satisfying.
Not satisfying at all.
And the bag was very primitive. It was like a book bag. It was a modern book bag. Yeah. It was like something you get at Barnes & Noble or something.
It was. It's when you buy a certain amount of books, Barnes & Noble gives you this cloth bag as an extra gift. And that's what it looked
maybe
exactly
like. Maybe he's a reader. Maybe
he's
a stowaway.
He's got a lot of time if he stowed away.
He brought some books.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And Tuvok senses that, okay, so the life support has been beamed into this part of this section of this Jeffrey's
right
tube,
behind this door.
And the other part behind this door, which he opens. Yeah. And now we see our stowaway for the first time. And he's very, very shocked that he's been caught. We jump to Tall's quarters. Tall is talking about what it would be like to see pulsars up close instead of always on long range sensors. And she's not happy that they always have to stay away from other species because of this fear factor they have, the xenophobia that they all experience, or at least some of them are experiencing. And so again, we get a little glimpse into what Tall
really is
about. Yeah.
Yeah. She really wants to explore and get out of here and not be trapped. Harry says things are going to have to change, that there's bad news. This has to end. It shouldn't have happened.
The relationship. Yeah.
The relationship. And then he glows again.
Does he glow in here again? She says to him, well, how did they find out? I said, well, I glowed again in astrometrics. And that's
what
when
is
I had to
this?
Go.
He asks. Yeah. And she explains it's called Olanvora.
Olanvora.
Olanvora, which means a shared heart.
Yes.
And she explains that this is a biological connection that is permanent, basically.
In the Varro species, it's
intended to be a permanent bonding between two Varro. Mm-hmm. And she said, it won't hurt you, but it will change you, she says.
But she's also shocked that I even experienced it too. She's like, wait a minute, this is weird.
I didn't
weird.
Think that this would happen to you.
Yeah.
And she said it can be reversed in time, slowly, if we're apart.
And the sad goodbye, it's like, okay, bye. And she's like, bye. And Harry's like, are you really going to let me leave? And she's like, well, if that's what you want. And Harry's like, that's not what I want.
Not what I want.
I want to be a bad boy. I want to be like Tom Paris season one. That's what I want.
That's right.
I turn around and I go back for more Nookie.
Yep. And
what
big romantic, Hollywood kiss happens right
there. Yeah. Nice. Did you notice she actually, on the goodbye, she started crying. Did you see that? She's out of focus. So credit to Mizetta Vander. She starts losing it, and then she kind of regains consciousness. She goes, if that's what you want. And then I turn around, I guess, not what I want. And then she turns from total crying to like, oh, let's get it on. So it's sort of, you know, a credit to her acting skills. She actually did a good job with that transition.
Very nice. Very good scene. Okay. We go to the conference room next. Chakotay is interrogating this intruder.
Yes.
He's there with Tuvok, and they learn that this Varro stowaway was able to get around Voyager systems through the docking port.
Yeah.
And he entered through the docking port and he came aboard because he wants to get away from, just like Tall, he wants off. Right. This.
But we don't know that yet about Tall. We know Tall wishes that they would be more,
that she could travel, but we don't know. So he keeps explaining. He says, you know, he wants to get off from this generational ship. And he reveals that there's a movement, that he's not the only one.
Rumors of a movement.
Rumors of a movement.
Yes, yes.
And then all of a sudden he's like, wait a minute, you're trying to trick me.
Yeah.
And then he realizes maybe he said too much.
Clams up a bit.
And he clams up a bit. But it's a nice scene. I think he did a great job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Starts to reveal a little more about maybe what's really going on this generational ship.
Yeah.
We go to Janeway's quarters, where I expected a romantic, since this is a love story, I thought finally Janeway and Chakotay, they're sharing a romantic meal. They're going to feel the love bug. But no, they don't. No satisfaction for JC Shippers. No, they just
Janeway shows Chakotay the new protocols for working with the Varro because of what happened between Harry and Tall. Yeah. And then
they're drinking coffee and eating salad. I was like, what a disgusting meal. No wonder you guys aren't getting any nookie. That's not a romantic meal. Salad and coffee?
Ugh. That's not a good combination.
It doesn't put you in the mood for love.
No. So I did write down, I really appreciated that Chakotay went to bat for Harry.
Yes, he
does. You know, she basically
he's like, okay, rethink this. Yeah. Like, you're this formal reprimand. Got a perfect record. Yeah. Like,
and then he gives her the big question. Are you angry because Harry disobeyed orders, or because he let you down? Which is, you know, that's the big question. It's so true. Yeah. And then, of course, this conversation is interrupted by Torres hailing the captain that she has found something very important. So off to the races, Janeway goes.
Again, no satisfaction for JC Shippers.
No, none at all.
Thanks, B'Elanna, for calling Janeway out.
So
eventually, that salad and coffee would have kicked in, and they would have had a lot of romantic time.
Now, Japek and Janeway are walking in the corridor.
Japek is like 2 feet taller than her.
He's a tall dude. He really is. But I noticed that a lot of his lines were they're a little bit off. And now that I'm thinking about it, he looped all of that, clearly, because he's very, very terse in his dialogue when he's talking. And he's like, when two people choose each other, the bonding is permanent. They become biochemically linked. Separation is rare. It induces illness, sometimes fatal.
He looped it. He looped the whole thing.
All looped.
It's never going to be the same as what really happened on the day. And so even if the audience can't tell what it is.
Yeah.
There's some damage done to the scene because it's just not a real performance. But these are a couple in a row where I'm like, I wish they would have given the real thing. Maybe there was just so much noise that it was not usable, but
maybe.
We do find out in this hallway scene, by the way, Japek says this could be fatal.
Yes.
For Tall.
I mentioned that.
And that's, so it could be fader. We do learn that there.
Mm-hmm.
We go to engineering, and Torres has discovered microfractures on Voyager's hull as well.
Well, in one of our docking ports, so not in our hull yet. So it's actually, you know, the part of our port, docking port. And it's the same fractures that the Varro are experiencing on their vessel. Mm-hmm. And Torres felt her spidey senses came on, and she felt that this is not a coincidence. This is a little something weird. Seven is the one who confirms that they are synthetic silicone-based parasites that feed on duranium alloys.
Mm-hmm.
And they were on the Varro ship. They replicated. Some of them sort of migrated to the Voyager docking port. And this was not something.
It's not a natural occurrence.
Not natural. No.
This is synthetic. It's man-made. Yes,
somebody put it there.
Did this
on purpose.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So we go to Tall's quarters next. Mm-hmm. She gets a call from Harry.
Harry hails her.
Mm-hmm. Hails her. and basically beams her out. He's like, get ready for a fun ride.
Yep.
And she's beamed out. Now, when she's beamed out, the moment in her quarters when she's beamed out, she kind of goes, oh, she gasps and throws her head back. And I was like, what's going on here? Like, did she decide to do that? Because I've never seen anyone get beamed out where they have like a
moment of revelation that they're being beamed out. You mean, is that what you're saying?
Maybe. Yes.
A reaction
like that.
When,
like,
Neelix did that, when Neelix first got beamed on, he was like this. He did this thing where he had his hands up. Do you remember that? The first time we beamed him aboard.
Yes.
Yeah, he'd never been beamed before. So I'm assuming they don't have beaming technology. So that's why I wrote that off as that. I didn't see it as
okay. I don't know. It took me out for a second. I was like, oh, they should have just let her get beamed out like a regular beam.
Okay.
And then seen her reaction on the B side. Like, it'd be different if you see it after it happens to react to, oh my God, what just happened to me?
Yeah.
But to have it like be reacting when you're still in the part one seemed weird. That's all I'm going to say.
I hear you. And so the next scene in the shuttlecraft
is in the shuttle when she arrives in the shuttle, then I could see her going,
okay,
whoa, what just happened?
Okay, but I'll tell you, I'm gonna stick up for Musetta on this, because that shuttlecraft interior shot was the very first scene that we shot together.
Okay,
so I'm thinking she filmed the beam out way after, and she didn't, and so she wasn't able to match. You see what I'm saying? So if she filmed it afterwards, she didn't know day one. She's already got day one nerves. She's a guest star on a major show. This is her first scene to shoot of her work week, basically, is inside this shuttle. So then whatever she did later to be beamed out, she could not match, because time-wise, it was already finished, right? So, and I remember how awkward how nervous I was to film.
This was the first scene that you filmed?
Yes, with her. It was the very, very first scene, was inside the shuttle. And I don't think it was David Livingston who directed her to sit on my lap, but I think it was her initiative where she thought, hey,
seems like it would have been. That would be my guess.
And I remember being thinking, wow, good for you, because I'm so damn nervous. I wouldn't have even thought about that blocking move, but you you came up with this. So, and it makes it immediately gives the audience a sense of there's this intimacy between the two of her sitting in my lap, right? So it was a great choice, because I do feel like for me, I was very disconnected, because I this is my first time working with her, and she's supposedly my girlfriend, right? So there should be even more intimacy going on. But being the first scene that we filmed, there was that awkwardness of working with someone for the first time. And especially in that scene, I have the line, you're beautiful when you're scanning. And in preparation for that, I could not figure out how to deliver this without sounding cheesy. I was like, okay, this has got to sound like it's very contemporary for 24th century. This is just really easy for me to kind of throw this out there. And no matter what way I tried in my own personal rehearsal before I got to the set, it didn't come out right of my mouth, and it still didn't. It came out almost creepy when I was watching it in this scene. It just, again, for me, it was not connected. And that was the one note I made for this scene, is I did not have that one line down the way I wanted to have it.
Well, it's funny I know when I am directing and producing now, I try to keep in mind those issues of like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Is this, where in the story is this for the actors? Is this the best place to schedule this scene?
Right.
Sometimes you can't help it.
Yeah.
But this would, I agree with you. I think this would have been one that could have been put in a little later in the schedule, would have been helpful probably.
Well, here's a question for you. When you have two actors that have just met and they have to do a scene where there's intimate moments, how do you direct the actors to get them calm enough and relaxed enough and open enough to be able to act present?
The best thing in that situation is to remind them, because they're just doing the first scene in a much bigger story.
Yeah.
And you're asking a lot of them. So keep reminding them of the other scenes that have come before.
Okay.
You know, here's where we saw you last. And and here's how we got to that point. You know, you guys have been through this and you've been through this.
Yeah.
You know, just reminding them of all that, because they haven't shot it yet.
Yeah. And really putting that, throwing those words out there does help because now it puts everything into context. Now those actors are thinking, oh yeah, that's right. We just had that happen, which we haven't shot yet. And we also had this other thing that we have not shot yet, but this all builds up to the climax of this scene. So I need to start off already at this level and not build up to it because it's already been built up to before this, right? So
well, that constant reminder. Yeah, the interesting thing about this story for you as an actor too is the very first shot when the door opens and we see your feet and you're kissing her, we've skipped beyond all of the first meetings. You never had those scenes.
No. And
those
happened
off camera.
And I got to say, when I watched this episode just now, and that was the very first scene of us kissing, I was like, whoa, that's the first scene. Like I thought that it was built up to that. No, that was the very first
scene. You dove right into the story. Anyway, she's on this shuttle. Thank you for not taking the Delta Flyer and getting it all, you know.
Well, we also ruined. We also learned that Harry
talked love making
with all our glowing
Delta Flyer.
You don't want our glow juices. You don't want our glow juices in your Delta Flyer.
Not in the flyer.
All right. Well, we discovered that Harry talks about how he feels like a Borg drone, about how he goes through all these things. We learned that he was the perfect student at Starfleet Academy. He was the captain of the Velocity team. What's Velocity? Do you know what Velocity is?
It's a game, isn't it?
Clearly it's a game, but I don't know what the game
is. It's like lacrosse or something, I think. Okay. It's like a high lie and lacrosse. Yeah.
Mixed together. Okay.
Mixed together kind of thing. I think something like that.
Yeah. Tuvok's the party pooper here. He's the one that he's actually
he took the Delta Flyer.
I can't believe you allowed Tuvok to just take the Delta Flyer without permission.
Well, if you want to get a job done, you know, Tuvok knows the best thing to take is that Delta Flyer. You'll get the job done.
Yeah. So we discover that Tuvok's not happy that it's an unauthorized shuttle.
Unauthorized shuttle.
Shuttle launch.
And Tall is wanted by the Varro authorities,
which is a shock to
sabotage.
Well, they don't say that. He just says wanted for Varro authority, wanted by the Varro authorities. We don't know what it's for. There's the look. The last shot is of Harry kind of looking shocked at Tall, and Tall looking back at him, kind of like, look. Mm-hmm. We jump to the briefing room, and it's Japan, Tuvok, Janeway, and Harry.
She's in trouble.
But she does come out. She talks about this freedom movement, and she's very passionate about it. And you know, Janeway and Japak are basically saying, you know, this is going to destroy the vessel. And Tall is like, okay, well, I'm not trying to destroy the vessel. We are not trying to destroy the generational ship. We're trying to dismantle it. We're trying to separate the segments. Mm-hmm. Each segment will become its own ship so that they can go wherever they want to go. And
they do bring up an issue of the rights of the minority, even though most people want to stay.
Yes.
There's enough people, hundreds, maybe thousands.
Maybe thousands, yeah.
That want to leave.
They want
off. Even though it's a minority, that they have rights too. And I thought that was an interesting point just philosophically to bring up here.
Yep.
Is that just because the majority wants to stay doesn't mean that that minority should be forced to stay a part of that. If they want to stay a part of it, then they need to follow all the rules of that group. But if they want to separate completely, that did make sense to me. Like, sure. If you want to take off, get out of here. Go do your own thing. It was a nice moment that I thought brought up in the story.
Yeah.
Surprising little philosophical moment.
Janeway does bring up the fact that if these segments come apart, there could be decompressive explosions and casualties. So essentially, Tall at the end of this briefing room scene agrees to slow down the parasites to help evacuate the segments that are in danger. You know, with Harry sort of pushes Tall towards that decision, and she's like, fine, I'll help slow them down, but that's all. And they exit there because this has to be done now. So Tall and Japak
leave.
This is
what begins the most ambitious oneer I have ever seen on Star Trek.
Oh boy.
And by the way, I remember filming this. I'm not in the shot. You don't see me. No. But I was there. I spent half a day sitting on the bridge where I was not seen, because this shot starts in the briefing room as Tuvok rises and brings us over to a three shot with Harry and Janeway. And then Tuvok exits. That shot continues all the way through the briefing room, across the bridge, into Janeway's ready room.
Yes.
And all the way to the end of the scene.
Yes.
It's a one-er.
It's a one-er, and it's very ambitious, but it threw me off.
I don't blame you.
It threw me off as an actor, okay? Because it starts with when I after Tal and Jopek leave, I'm like, Captain, and she said, stow it, Ensign.
Stow it.
That's, yeah, mm-hmm. Which is a great line, right? And she confines me to sickbay, basically, and I chase her out. And just the blocking, the movement to go from one set to the bridge, this is the second set to the third set, which is her ready room, then to have to go through that entire monologue, I got so out of breath, I was starting to hyperventilate, okay? And when I was hyperventilating, it then caused me to sort of, I actually lost track of where I was in my own monologue. So I went up on my line in this one particular place right after I said, do you know what love is, Captain? And I kind of lost my lines and we had to cut and do it again.
The whole thing.
Yes. And we had to.
Oh, yeah. I was on the bridge.
Robbie, I lost it a second time. And I think what happened was we did one more take and I was so frazzled. They yelled cut and I just booked it to my trailer. And really? Oh, my God. I was crying. I was in my trailer bawling. Just crying because I was so frustrated because I knew that scene and I wanted to nail it and I wanted to do well. And I was so of just upset that I started crying. And I think I started crying as I was on the set. I ran off crying and into my trailer.
You know what's interesting though? I didn't know this and I don't remember all of this. But when I watched the scene, you had a vulnerability in the scene that I thought was really authentic.
Okay.
And I do think ultimately you got a lot of vulnerability and authenticity out of that scene that may not have happened if you hadn't sort of broken down and kind of hit that bottom where you had to come back in that authentic way. I think, you know,
maybe
it's not pleasant. You know, it was a very unique scene to watch. We didn't normally do things that way. I thought it ultimately was very successful. The emotion in the scene from both Kate and from you was really authentic and strong and in ways that sometimes we can be very presentational in Star Trek.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like it was presentational. I felt like that was two actors hitting some really authentic stuff.
If you buy it as an audience member, then that's good. That's what counts, I did. Right? That's the bottom line, really.
I was moved by it. Yeah. I was moved by the scene. And I think that's a sign of a success.
Okay, good. And in the intro, when we filmed the intro for this, and I said, I've got a lot to talk about this, it was this scene that I really was referencing. Okay, so after the big Harry Kim trying to ask Janeway if she's ever been in love, which I started laughing at, we get called in to the bridge because they're detecting structural breaches on the Varro ship and everything is about to hit the fan, so to speak. Good enough that Janeway lets me go to the station and not to sickbay. She's like, take your station. So I'm at my station now. Yeah. We are still docked with the Varro ship. The docking controls are offline. According to Paris, we can't even break free.
He's unable to release the docking clamps.
No.
Yeah.
We jumped to the Varro control room and the parasites have been slowed down a bit by the Polaron surge that Tal has initiated, but Tal yells out that they need a couple more minutes for the evacuation. Yep. And this is when back on the bridge, we realize the docking controls are now back online. We can leave, but Harry quickly suggests that we can extend Voyager's structural integrity field around the Varro ship so that we can buy them more time. Janeway thinks for a split second and says, yes, let's do that, which is a dangerous move because if an explosion happens,
both of us,
both ships are now
everybody dies. Danger.
That's correct. We're back in the Varro control room. And now Tal is telling Jopek, well, looky here. Look at these strangers.
They're not so mean.
They're not so mean, are they? They're risking their life to help save us. And then I love Jopek's answer. They are unusual. That sounds like Tuvok, right? So he's like, okay. Yeah. Now Jopek wants to use another Polaron surge to destroy all the parasites. And Tal says, look, it's just too late. It's going to destroy, you destroy the parasites, but you'll also destroy Voyager because they're still, you know, they're still locked on to our ship right now. So she says, let them go and then let us go. And Jopek finally, he relents. He's like, fine,
He steps back.
Yeah.
Lets her do the thing. And then we cut out to space.
Super cool shot. This exterior shot. Super cool
decoupling with Voyager kind of sideways and then kind of twisting and getting out. The station starts exploding, decoupling into much smaller, lots and lots of smaller ships.
Mm-hmm.
We have a captain's log at this
supplemental
point.
Yeah.
Supplemental log that most of the Varro decided to stay together, but that some of the dissidents decided to go it alone off
their separate way. We jump to Tall's quarters and this is the final goodbye. Tall asks Harry how he's doing. He says lovesick, Tall as well. Tall says that they have medications and then that can help her manage it. Mm-hmm. And that she says she will recover eventually. Harry asks where they're going. And she says the Notori system where a pair of binary stars are caught together in each other's gravity. So kind of poetic and kind of, alluding to our own relationship. And then Harry says, well, you know, promise me something. She says, what? She says, next time you run across a Class 3 nebula, think of me. So we have this very romantic ending moment. We jump to sick bay and we see the doctor going through all of Harry's symptoms: chronic sleep loss, acute gastroenteritis.
That's diarrhea.
Thank you. And we have
I didn't know you could get diarrhea from being heartbroken.
So not only can I not sleep, but my days and nights are filled with going to the bathroom. Yeah. Love it. Doctor.
The captain says, is his condition fatal?
Right.
Because the doctor wants to keep him there, put him on all kinds of medications.
Well, the doctor asks Janeway to order. She says, the doctor says, order Harry to take his medicine. And then that's when Janeway says, well, is it fatal? And he's like, well, no, but.
But maybe diarrhea is fatal. I'm just going to say.
Okay. And so she lets him just sort of stay unmedicated, basically.
Yeah. Let him suffer if he wants. Yeah.
And then she asks the doctor for some privacy and sits next to Harry.
Sits on the bed with him.
Bed with Harry, very close. Moment. Yeah, this wonderful two shot between Janeway and Harry. And with the final lines being, Harry says, well, maybe I'm not the perfect officer anymore. Janeway says, maybe not. And the camera now veers off of Janeway into a one-er on Harry. And you hear Janeway say, but you're a better man. And so that ends that scene, which is...
I love that.
Yeah, yeah. Mess hall. Neelix says, last call. Harry's still there. He says, good night to me. Love that little interaction between Seven and Neelix, where he's like, oh, is there anything else I can get you? Seven says, I'm here to see Ensign Kim. And Neelix's line, love it. He's like, oh, good luck.
Good luck.
It was so good. He had three words in that line, but it said everything. And again, Ethan Phillips, a master at his craft. Great job with that. And then, you know, Seven comes in and starts. She thanks him, first of all. Thank you for helping me out. You completed several of my astrometric scans for me. And then she says that, you know, she assumed that romantic love was a human weakness, but clearly it can be a source of strength, and that her analogy of love being a disease was flawed. And her apology, her final apology, is basically saying, get well soon at the end. Well, so another, very touching moment.
She says it sort of awkwardly.
Get well soon. But hey, but for Seven, this is a huge step for her. I mean, she's so dry and so like, you know, whatever. And now she's like caring about somebody. So it was kind of nice to see that scene out of Seven.
Really good.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
All right, what's your theme for this?
My theme, here's what I wrote down. The price of real love is real pain. Because Harry's thought, he's had crushes before. Man. But I feel like as a character, this episode was about real love. He felt it. He really was experiencing something that was very real. And he felt the real pain. that comes along with that. So,
okay.
Yeah. What about you?
Yeah, mine, I felt like you would probably be going in that direction. So I went in a little bit of a different direction. And my thing was just about how xenophobia is never a good thing. It's never a good thing. Like you can be wary of other people or other races or other individuals. It's always good to be aware of your surroundings and of your situation. Mm-hmm. But to sort of excommunicate people or species or races because they are different from you is a big mistake. Mm-hmm. It's a huge, huge mistake. You must look for collaboration. You must look for common ground when you meet people that are not like you. That's the goal is to collaborate and to be friendly with anybody, you know, and that is clearly not what the Varro were about. And I think that is the lesson is beware.
I think they learned that lesson. I think they did.
At the very Japan, end. Yeah.
Yeah.
Japan they learned finally, it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, beware of being, of falling down that xenophobic rabbit hole.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
That's awesome. Mine. All right.
Okay. My rating for the disease.
Yes.
I'm going to give this an 8.2.
Oh, 8.2.
Mr.
2, my goodness.
Yeah.
It did use a lot of the actors.
It did use a lot of the actors.
Yeah.
I mean, it didn't have a lot of B'Elanna. She had a couple of lines, you know, not a lot of Neelix.
Yeah.
Not a ton of Tuvok, but I think that it had a very relatable story. This love story to me was very, very relatable. I thought it had really good highs and lows. It involved a lot of the cast. I give it
8.2.
Okay. What about you?
I'm gonna give it a, because of my hair, I'm giving it a 7.9. So
what?
I'm gonna go, I gotta drop lower. I'm sorry.
I know.
It's just
I like this episode better than a 7 anything. It's gotta be an 8 at least.
I'll be honest, I would have given it a higher rating if I hadn't seen it again. And once I saw it again, I actually gave it a lower rating than
really?
What I thought it was. Yeah, it's really weird. I'm weird like that. All right. Yeah. So what's the consensus amongst our
admirals? So our captains and admirals, our average rating for the disease is 7.1.
Wow. They went really low.
They went low, much lower than I think this has to have an 8 in front of it. I like this episode a lot.
I think they were distracted by my curly hair, my poofy
maybe they
hair
were.
Too.
Maybe
I don't
they
know.
Were.
7.1. Oh my goodness. All right.
You got an 8.2 from me.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm just going to let you know what next week is while we're at it. So
what is it?
Next week is the episode Course Oblivion. Yes, and this is an episode that I referred to before, but I thought it was a different episode, and now this is finally the episode. It's coming up now, so so this episode ties in with an episode that Tom and Harry are pretty prominent in a prior episode, basically.
Okay.
Just know that. So there's a tie-in. Right. It's a very, very
Course
distinct
tie-in. Oblivion.
Course Oblivion.
Okay.
Thanks, everyone. We will see you next week.
Thanks, everybody.